morning. Welcome into the 9 to 10 show. It is 8 minutes after 9 o'clock, and this is American DA Live. And week number two of the same case that we began last week but couldn't get through because it was so intricate and complicated and bizarre. Brought to you by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Landscaper's Corner has Triple Crown Elite grass seed, the seed everybody's talking about, available in 5, 25, and 50-pound bags. Call 225-9433, Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson. Good morning, Ray.
Morning, Jack.
Tell us about our subject this morning, which was the same as last week, only this time we're going to get to the trial.
Right. The well, Jet Swisher, who is one of our interns for the summer, listened to you say a term, reset.
Mm-hmm.
And reset means, as she came up with this analogy, of rewind.
Yep.
And the idea is to, for people who weren't listening, to get up to speed. And this is what she wrote. Last week, Northern Kentucky prosecutor Linda Talley Smith joined us to discuss one of those most brutal crimes ever featured on this show, the murder case against Raymond Clutter. His record includes child molestation, conspiracy to commit murder, hiring hitmen, and many other crimes. It involves the murder, rape, and dismemberment of Peggy Casey, the mother of four. It was an unsolved case for many years. And the investigation was so, well, interesting and complicated that we basically didn't get to the trial. And so we asked Linda, the superstar prosecutor who forgot about us.
You didn't have to say that.
Well, she did.
He didn't, did he?
She dumped me like a bad habit.
She did.
And so, but we.
She got a better offer.
Right. Yeah. But we tracked her down.
Linda, could you just give us a minute and a half? I know that's hard to do, but a minute and a half of what this guy did.
This was a case where he came to us trying to get a knock off of his federal sentence by basically selling out his own son and trying to accuse him of committing this murder. It was from April the 1st of 1994, and Peggy Casey disappeared from a bar in Covington, and parts of her body were found within hours of her disappearance, spread around rural counties in Ohio.
And so how did the investigative team, a key player in this was a gentleman who, as I recall, was retired that you use in these kind of cases, who really was a kind of a superstar in this case. Tell us about him.
Todd Kenner, he's retired now. At the time, he was basically on his second career. He had left the state police as a road trooper and came to work for the Boone County Sheriff's Department, where his dad was formerly the sheriff, and basically just found his niche working cold cases. And he just is the type of person that has sort of an obsessive personality, and once he gets his mind set on something, he can't think about anything else until he gets it done, and had a lot of success with many cold cases that we were stumped with in our county, and this was one of them. And, you know, when I asked him to become involved, it was really just to sort of, you know, process the information that we were getting, and he basically just started hunting and was able to solve the case. And Mr. Clutter was indicted within about 2 years. You know, they went back forensically and tried to gather any evidence that they could. The current homeowners, or the homeowners at the time of the mobile home where this was alleged to have occurred, actually let them come in and tear out caulking in their bathroom where, you know, offenses took place, to see if they could find any trace evidence, and, you know, allowed them to, you know, look underneath floors and air ducts just to see if they could find anything. And we were hitting roadblocks. We couldn't find any physical evidence to be helpful in connection with the case. But the most important thing that we had was an eyewitness, who was the third person who was present when this took place.
And the eyewitness, this Clutter, hired a hitman to kill the eyewitness, and then he hired another hitman to kill the hitman.
Well, he hired the hitman to kill the eyewitness to the rape case in Gallatin County.
Okay.
And he was already in prison for that offense when Mr. White was tracked down, and investigators showed up at his door, and he said, "I've been waiting for years to for someone to come ask me about this." And he lived in legitimate fear because he knew what Ray Clutter was capable of. He had seen the things that he'd done, obviously in this case, and to other people who crossed him. And so he basically lived a life of seclusion, just waiting for something to happen. And so when he told them what he saw that day, it was like the weight of the world was lifted off of his chest. But as things like these go in the criminal justice system, it takes years for them to crawl through the system, which is one of the most frustrating things for the families of victims in criminal cases, is just how slowly it moves, because it's really not controlled at our pace. It's a lot of times controlled more by the defense pace. And because Mr. Clutter was serving a federal sentence, he wasn't even released to our custody until he was finished serving that federal sentence.
Well, that's the feds have had some bad experiences where they release people to state charges elsewhere, and then they get involved in a long, protracted legal battle to keep from going back to federal custody.
So that's why they're reluctant.
Well, yeah, I would too.
Yeah.
So any rate, Linda, so he was charged by the case was presented to the grand jury.
Yes.
And he was charged with what?
He was charged with murder, rape, and tampering with physical evidence.
All right. Now.
And so once he got back to the state of Kentucky, he had attorneys who were working his case, and he also had the Gallatin County rape case still pending. And so because of various delays involving the murder case, we wound up trying the sexual assault first, which obviously involved putting a young lady on the stand to testify about things that started happening to her when she was very, very young. And he was tried in Gallatin County by a jury and was convicted of those charges and received a very long sentence out of those offenses. And then probably about a year and a half later, we started the criminal trial for the murder cases up in Boone County. But the most fascinating thing about what we do are the people that we encounter along the way, because in cases like these, you have groups of witnesses who have little teeny pieces of the puzzle that you still have to sew together in order to tell a comprehensive picture, because without physical evidence in this case, it was all going to come down to circumstantial evidence and witness testimony.
And we've also learned over the years doing this show, that the longer time lapses between the crime and the trial, the harder it is to assemble people that were involved. People die, people move, mm-hmm. people forget.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And one thing that happened that was one of those things that, you know, was made us happy because it was just one more piece that was going to make it stronger, is that we were contacted by Mr. Clutter's cellmate while he was in the federal system. And he had made about two incriminating statements to this particular gentleman. And so once he was released from the federal sentence, he was returned to Ohio where he had a state sentence. And we went up and met with this gentleman, and he was a very articulate man. He was, a college graduate and basically fell into a life of drugs and began breaking into homes. And he, and this is, you know, sort of another fascinating part of the story, but he had a prosthetic leg because years earlier he had been involved in a shootout in Michigan and lost his leg in that shootout. Not that that had anything to do with anything at the time we met with him, but he was a credible witness. And, you know, while the statements that Ray Clutter made couldn't be construed as full-out confessions, they were valuable statements in light of everything else that we had. And so probably about 6 months before we were ready to try the case, we received word that there was a body that was supposedly dumped in Boone County, which this particular gentleman was from Dayton, Ohio. He was paroled on his Ohio charges, and information was received that a body was dumped in Boone County and that the person who supposedly did it was this man. And as it turned out, he was involved in a shooting in Florida. He was in a traffic offense. Officer went to try to pull him over. He ran from him, And when the officer finally got him stopped, he got out of the vehicle and pulled a gun that he had concealed in his prosthetic leg and got in a shootout with the police and wound up dead from that transaction. Basically, after he had gotten paroled, he killed his wife, wrapped her body in a carpet, and then dumped it in Boone County, and then took off to Florida, hoping not to get caught. But, of course, I'm quite confident that he chose Boone County to dump the body in, knowing that if he was caught, that there was something he still had that we wanted. But, you know, obviously that witness was lost, which in the big picture was not that big of a deal, but at the time it was, because the statements that he had to offer were fascinating. So that's just, again, just one part of the story. That's the ups and downs of preparing for these things.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we promise we'll get to the trial, Ray. I promise we will. And if you have a question or comment along the way, 253-590 WVLK. And, Ray, we got ourselves a humdinger of a case here, and we can't seem to get to the trial because it's too complicated. So let's just cut to the chase. What do you say?
Well, the interesting thing here is the Linda talked about the cellmate with the peg leg.
Yeah.
And probably should have.
A little insensitive, but go ahead.
Yeah. But it's and Linda's dog is
right
there.
Yes, it is.
It's an example of the kind of stuff you have to deal with. You know, Raymond Clutter picks his witnesses. Mm-hmm. Linda doesn't pick the witnesses, and this is the kind of yo-yo that Raymond Clutter picked, and he turns out to be federal inmate paroled, but then a killer, and then gets himself killed by in a police shootout, right?
The so, other gentleman did, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Linda, you finally get to trial.
Yes.
First of all, how long did the trial take?
The trial itself probably took about 8 full days because we wound up trying it as a bench trial.
What does that mean?
And tried it to a judge instead
not a
of a jury.
Well, how did that come about? That's interesting. Listen up out there, listeners. This is
the whole story.
Yeah. This is Criminal Justice 101.
Yeah. How do you get to bench trial?
We started a jury trial with individual voir dire because it was a death eligible offense, and we spent 2 weeks picking a jury through the individual voir dire process, and when we did our opening statement, a statement was made during the opening statement that basically caused a mistrial. It was completely inadvertent in the court, and even the defense agreed that nobody intended for it to come out that way. But it was bad enough that the judge had no choice but to declare a mistrial. And so we agreed to a bench trial and agreed to take death off of the table simply so that we could move the trial more quickly, because it wasn't fair to the family because of a mistake that we made to prolong it even longer than we should have.
Can you explain that, what you did?
Well, it was, you know, some of these things are so complicated.
Right.
And when you have three people at the scene, you have Raymond Clutter, you have his son, and then you have an eyewitness. The son, remember I told you last week, was dead.
Right.
But before his death, he made a number of statements to witnesses that basically told them what happened at this trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, based upon a rule that we have that's called the Bruton Rule, because he was not available as a witness, the parts of his statements that implicated himself could come in, but not anything mentioning what his dad did.
And that's because he's dead and you can't cross-examine
him?
Okay.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And so the judge had ruled specifically what the witnesses were allowed to say, and obviously it's very delicate stepping over those things. And so the opening statement was made by another prosecutor in my office, and it was written, it was went over and everything, and it was all redacted the way it should be. But when you're up there and you're nervous and people are watching you, he basically inserted two words that he shouldn't have.
Wow, that's interesting.
Well, it happens with prosecutors, it happens with witnesses.
Yeah.
For example, a police officer might say when he stops somebody that he ran his license plate and at the same time ran his record on his in-vehicle computer, and it came back that the guy was, there was a warrant out for him for another charge. Well, he can't say that.
Yeah.
But if they do, then we
got a mistrial.
We got a mistrial. Yeah. And so that happens, and it's just, it's very, very, you got to be careful about all of this sort of thing when you're preparing witnesses.
So you had to take death off the table, basically.
Well, we didn't have to. We just offered to do that simply because we knew it would take months for us to be able to call in a whole other jury panel and death qualify another jury panel, because it's a very long and tedious process. And so we simply took that off the table and basically as one of the aggravating circumstances, but still had life without possibility of parole and the other options available at that point in time. And then as we got closer to trial, you know, I suggested to the defense, and then they thought about it and agreed it was a good idea to just go ahead and try it to a judge. And the reason why is because, you know, they had filed motions, just like Ray said before. You know, Ray Clutter lived a life as the owner of strip clubs and bootlegging liquor and, you know, committing all other kinds of crimes just because that's the kind of guy he was. And we knew that it was going to be very, very hard for all these witnesses to walk the fine line of testifying and not stepping on those landmines.
Not saying something they shouldn't, Let me ask you this, and I want to ask Ray the same question. Would you prefer hearing having a case heard before a judge than a jury, or the other way around, given your druthers? Linda first.
It's a judgment call. It depends on the case.
Okay.
It depends on the facts. It depends on the things that cut for and against both sides. And so, you know, we weigh it in a number of different cases. We don't do a lot of bench trials, but, you know, they move a lot quicker. You know, you don't have to go through the whole jury selection process. You don't have to worry about the jurors taking breaks and having them leave the courtroom while you argue motions to make sure they're not overhearing some things. And so it does move at a much quicker pace. But, you know, a judge has the ability to, you know, comb through a witness's testimony and basically disregard the things that the judge knows are not the things that should be regarded in making the decision.
What do you say, Ray? You'd rather be before a jury, wouldn't you?
I think most prosecutors would.
Yeah.
Now, it's on a case by case basis.
Sure.
And it's on a judge by judge.
I bet. Yes, sir.
I mean, you got a wimpy judge.
Some liberal judge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. Okay, let's take a break. We'll get an update from
done.
And we are back. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us, and also Northern Kentucky Commonwealth Attorney Linda Talley Smith. Let's go to the calls. We'll take one quick here. Ed, good morning.
Good morning. This may be a little nitpicky, but I have to say to Ray and his guests, all the time on the radio and on the evening news, I hear police officers refer to perpetrators as gentlemen, and the prosecutor did that. Gentleman is somebody who is civilized and obeys the laws. These are not gentlemen. When a man's in a federal prison for drug dealing and later gets killed in a shootout, he's not a gentleman. He's a man, but he's not a gentleman, and it's a bad use of the word.
All right, Ed. Okay. All right, let's now got to... Okay, now,
Linda is far more sophisticated than I am.
Yeah, you don't use that term. Yeah.
Punk, outlaw, hoodlum, that sort of thing.
Right. Well, you know, there's a fine line, and I sometimes can't transition between courtroom talk and outside of courtroom
talk. And civilized society.
I just try to be across the board professional, and sometimes I lose perspective, I guess.
Okay, so you got a bench trial. And it still took 8 days.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That would have been a month long with the jury, wouldn't it? Or probably.
More than that.
Yeah.
We were looking at 6 to 7 weeks if we try it with the jury.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How many witnesses did you call, Linda?
Oh, I don't. You know, I'd say the number was probably in the neighborhood of about 35. And it was because there were so many people that had a little piece of the puzzle. You know, we sort of treated the way we presented this case in chunks because you had the law enforcement professionals from the state of Ohio who had found these body parts and had worked the physical evidence side of it, and followed many leads and tried to track down leads and came up with nothing. And then you had, you know, the Covington law enforcement angle of the people who investigated the missing persons, and, you know, and the lay witnesses who knew Peggy Casey and her family members talking about, you know, the last times they saw her, and people who had seen her, you know, in Covington that night. And then you had the last group, which was all of the clutter, you know, all of the friends and people that he associated with himself with back from this time period in 1994, who each had, just like I said, one small piece of the puzzle, you know, recollections from that weekend, which was vivid, as I pointed out last week, because it was opening day weekend, which in the Cincinnati area for the Cincinnati Reds is a big deal. And in the Covington bar scenes, it's a big deal. It's a high-volume weekend for them. And so a lot of these people who were his associates worked in his clubs and went to bars with him, and they all have very good recollections of those days. And so each one had to be called individually to sort of tell the story. And when we were talking about before about when to have a judge or a jury, I'd say probably 8 out of 10 of the witnesses that we called that were associates of Ray Clutter were all convicted felons themselves. And so, you know, credibility is obviously questioned under any circumstance, but, you know, that was something that had the potential to cut both ways, simply because our eyewitness, who basically wound up stealing the show, so to speak, was also a convicted felon. But in front of a jury, you're not allowed to tell them what they were convicted of.
What was the reputation of the judge you got?
We actually had a special judge wind up trying the case. It was Judge David Melcher, who was originally from Pendleton County, Harrison counties, and he's an extremely smart man, and was a district judge for years, and he was serving our area as a special judge because of our high caseload, and he was assigned to try the case. And he did, I believe, a fabulous job in keeping us on track and trying to avoid going off on all the tangents that you can possibly go off on in a case like this.
And when you deal with a jury, you have to don't forget, it's very difficult to get two people to agree on anything. And when you put 12 people from all sorts of different backgrounds together, they perceive things the same. They perceive the same thing differently.
Yeah.
And to get them to agree on anything is I think a modern miracle. In this kind of a case, I can't imagine that trying it before a jury, because you got all of these thugs that are coming in that you're holding up as witnesses. And that's probably the most difficult thing we do as prosecutors, because once again, defendants choose the witnesses. They choose the people in front of whom they commit crimes. And we'd love Mother Teresa to come in on every one of our cases, mm-hmm. but most of the people come in and they got all their scars and pimples and blemishes, and they bring them with them, and we got to hold them up and say, okay, believe him this time.
Right.
And it's a big issue. So I can't imagine that trying it before a jury would be a tougher situation, would be a better situation. So what ended up happening?
The final outcome, the judge found him guilty of the murder and the tampering with physical evidence, but found him not guilty on the rape. And we always knew that was, you know, the iffiest part, which we had filed notice of intent to seek death, and what made the case have the aggravating circumstances in order for us to seek death was if he was convicted of an intentional murder and rape. And so even if we had gone through that whole process with the jury, we knew there was a possibility that they'd find him not guilty of the rape. And here we have these jurors who spent all this time being death qualified, and then that wouldn't even be an option for them anymore.
One of the things that Linda mentions, filing a notice, that it's the short version of this notice, which puts the defense on notice that all of the penalties, the most serious penalties, are available. She says a notice to seek the death penalty. It's really a notice to include all of the penalties, because death penalty case, a case in which the death penalty is an option in Lexington, we will file the charge as an aggravated murder, and we ask the court to allow, to we file this notice that allows everybody to know that we're going to seek instructions on penalties from 20 years up to including the death penalty. We believe juries ought to be able to make that decision. And that's what this notice is all about. So tell me the...
Let's take a break before okay. we go on to that. 10 minutes before 10 o'clock, News Talk 590 WVLK. Ray Larson is with us in the studio, and we also have Linda Tally Smith, Northern Kentucky prosecutor, Commonwealth attorney. And we've got 6 minutes to wrap this up, Ray.
So what was the defense? I always want to know what the defendant's reaction is when he's found guilty.
None. I, as stone face comes, never showed a single ounce of emotion at any point in time in either trials that we had, the rape trial or the murder trial, even though this trial had lots of ups and downs and lots of witnesses who were called, but the case all boiled down to the eyewitness.
Now tell us about that, because you said he stole the show. What did he do?
I mean, you know, I'd met the gentleman years and years ago, and we met with him a couple of times over the years getting ready for the trial itself, and he faced charges in connection with this too, and so he had just as much on the line as anybody else did, maybe not as much as Ray Clutter, but when he testified, it was almost as if, you know, I basically made the decision to step away from the podium and stop asking questions and just let him tell the story, because, you know, the range of emotions that he showed, and at times, you know, it was almost as if he was there reliving it in his mind, and with hand gestures and you know, and just tears running down his face, talking about what he saw that night, and, you know, it being the worst moments of his life. Basically.
In a bench trial where you don't have a jury and the judge decides, after everybody's finished with their closing remarks, does he go and retire to his chambers, or how does that work?
He actually had us submit closing briefs instead of closing arguments because it was so many days of testimony that he wanted to make sure that we summarized things the way that we would want to for him. And then he announced a date to return his verdict about 3 to 4 weeks later and came back and had at that time prepared findings of fact and his verdict in the case.
And a judge actually writes a speech, does he not?
In this particular situation, he did, yes,
yeah.
Because it was all in the form of an order, and so he read it into the record. And so he found him not guilty on the rape charge, which, again, we knew was always possible because, you know, the charge itself was based upon statements that Peggy Casey made when the eyewitness and Ray Clutter's son returned to the trailer and found her basically in her bra and panties, and she cried that he had just raped her. And that was the impetus behind him attacking her and killing her and dismembering her then, is to keep her from going to the police.
Linda, she was, she had four kids.
Yes.
And I know the produce guy at Kroger tomorrow is going to ask me, well, whatever happened to the kids? So whatever happened to the kids?
The kids are all adults now, and one is in the military. I think he... was actually away in basic training at the time that we tried the case. She also had daughters who live in the Covington area, and life has not been easy for them. You know, it wasn't easy before this happened to their mother. They lived in pretty poor conditions, and their father died a number of years after Peggy was murdered, and, you know, they were raised by other family members, and life has not been easy for them. But most of all, you know, as any kid would, they miss their mother very much. And so Peggy's family members have, you know, rallied around and taken care of the kids over the years. And, you know, and they're doing well for themselves despite the circumstances. But, you know, that's no replacement for a child's own mother being in their life.
Well, I want to, for a minute, Jack, I want to brag about Linda.
Okay.
Oh.
In spite of the fact she punked us today and we had to find her.
I do it every day.
Yeah. Right. The... Linda is one of the role models for young women lawyers and prosecutors in our state. She's young, and she does it all. She's the mother of, I think, three kids. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
And she's married, and she runs a terrific office. She's very bright. She works hard and is a great role model and one of the bright lights of the 57 of us that call ourselves Commonwealth attorneys. And so I always like to talk to her on this show because she's very verbal.
Yep. Tells a good story, and that's not easy to do.
And so, Linda, don't ever tell anybody I said all that.
Isn't that nice? And, of course, since nobody heard that, you know, then you can deny it. But starting in Ray's office as an intern did nothing but confirm the very reason I went to law school, which was to be a felony prosecutor. And while he says I'm young, that is not quite accurate because this is the 20th anniversary of me starting as a prosecutor this year. Yeah.
Linda, thank you so much. We will have you back, I hope, in the near future. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Stand by. We have an update from ABC. If you're listening to WVLK AM, stay with us for Live with Lee and Lee Cruz.